Genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brain.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turn now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
About a person is more about what a person is really thinking than words themselves. He believes that we're doing more talking with our hands and more listening with our eyes than we actually think. He's a magician and a performer. He's also a gifted dactylologist. That's a practitioner of sign language. He shows us how to read people's real intentions, and that's no sleight of hand. If you're just curious about understanding people by their body language, you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. That's 639-0008. Dr. Gabriel Grayson began his university curriculum as a Roman Catholic divinity student. He's the hearing son of parents. He learned how to sign before he could actually speak. And once he learned how to speak, he never stopped creating a buzz. Gabe's initiatives and insights and interview skills have elicited and illuminated the thoughts and feelings of hundreds of guests, ranging from Muhammad Ali to Julia Roberts to Marcel Marceau. Yes, Marcel Marceau the mime actually did speak. As a principal, a court-appointed dactylologist for the New York City judicial system, judges, attorneys, physicians, psychologists, social workers all appreciate his clear and nuanced-filled skills, both as a civil and criminal legal proceedings. Gabriel is an extrasensory perception illusionist, and he's performed at the White House, get that, on Broadway, the United Nations, and countless other places in the United States and 14 other countries. He's been on numerous television and radio shows, too many to go through. He ministers for the deaf and the hard of hearing at the Cathedral of St. John the Divine in New York City. Gabriel is an athlete, hot air balloonist, motorcyclist, and a futurist. Welcome to the show, Gabriel. How are you today?
Well, greetings. I'm alive and well, and I just really am impressed by those guys' credentials. I haven't really heard them all rolled out into one for many, many years.
Well, you are somebody to be reckoned with, Gabriel. We don't want to sell you short. I want to honor you by letting people know just how many actual accomplishments you've had in your life. So it's just incredible. Thank you so much for being our guest today.
Well, thank you, Billy. I was very pleased to be able to talk about my new book, How to Read a Person Like a Book, because it really is a outgrowth from the book I did previous to that on directly sign language, which, as you mentioned, I teach at the New School in New York. And my publisher, after acquiring the rights, this book, How to Read a Person Like a Book, is something like over a million books that are in print, mainly because it was originally written 50 years ago by two researchers, Jerry Nirenberg and Henry Calero.
Yes.
And I was asked to add the new, much new information that has come about since that time. So that's how I became involved.
Oh, that's very interesting. All right, Gabriel. Well, why? Let's start at the beginning. Why is interpreting body language a useful skill to have at all?
Well, it's a very human skill and a real skill. It helps us understand more quickly and directly what's going on. And it is something that we are being read by other people consciously and unconsciously, a way to make ourselves more attractive and more effective in terms of how we are communicating. With all the electronic devices that bother everybody constantly, I haven't seen that communication has improved a great deal, even though there's much, much more of it. And certainly in face-to-face communication in a variety of situations, whether in a courtroom situation, picking a jury, or meeting someone, and the classic studies have shown within 7 seconds we have an impression in terms of an individual when we meet them. So body language is a very human thing, and as we are the highest evolved animals, much of it comes from the way animals relate and communicate with each other.
Hmm. Now, how did this phenomenon of body language first occur?
Well, there are historical records that the most recent of any fame had to do with a question of animal behavior, and Charles Darwin wrote about it. But the The field itself has really come together only about 50 years ago. It's relatively brand new, and I see more and more people in the media commenting on the nature of body language, especially with public figures, certainly politicians or clergymen or attorneys, how they relate to the folks that they're dealing with, and really often how they are telling us a whole other message with their body language.
Interesting. We're talking to Dr. Gabriel Grayson, everybody. He's written a book, How to Read a Person Like a Book, and today's theme is books. So I'm going to ask you, Gabriel, what's the easiest part of the body to read?
Well, we've, as hearing people look at and concentrate on our faces, and so do deaf people, and there are extraordinary kinds of, often it's very quick, signals which can be given, and there are two television shows that are quite successful that are running now. One is called The Mentalist, and the other is called Lie to Me, and they both have at their basis reading people's body language. And so I think as a boy growing up in Philadelphia, watching my mother and dad, who were deaf, communicate quickly with each other, I then extended it to the hearing world, and suddenly began to see patterns of people who were quote-unquote not so honest in what they were saying, or in fact putting on a show, a demonstration of what perhaps people wanted to hear, but in fact what they didn't really believe.
All right. Well, what are some of those telltale signs? Give us a few clues of some when you can look at somebody and just know that they're lying. I mean, mothers do this all the time. They look at their children,
oh, sure,
and they just know. How does that happen?
One, women are much better equipped for body language and reading faces than men are. We are a bit on the Neanderthal side in that sense. And when women talk about men just don't get it, that's part of what they're talking about, because there are several ways to get a feeling of making yourself more attractive or understandable. First, an animated face. Men don't tend to do that. I find it interesting over the years, my students at the New School, at the university, who come from Parsons School of Design, are mostly Korean and studying art, and they're very smooth in sign language, but they have very great difficulty expressing the emotion on their faces, because from their culture, it's not cool. It's not appropriate to actually act out or tune into what they're talking about. And smiling, being part of your regular repertoire. Show your teeth. Once you show your teeth, your whole face gets animated. And gestures. Gestures are, of course, extremely important to be expressive, but don't, you know, go over the top. Keep your fingers closed when you're gesturing. Don't ever be, especially in signing as well, do any signing in front of your face or around your face. And avoid, you know, crossing your arms, which is a classic, or feet crossing. And nodding while you're talking. Again, the animation idea. And eye contact, whether you're hearing or deaf. It's especially important in the deaf community, because your eyes, you know, really become your ears, and deaf people often look around a great deal more than hearing people. But when you're with each other, a person leaning forward in posture, showing that you're interested when you're speaking. And also the territorial thing. I mean, I just came from the Supreme Court, where I did a case this morning, but I also had to fight thousands of people in the subway car going there, and they invade your territory, and we try not to look at each other, but they're, you know, smashed up close to you. And given that we all understand what the issue is, it can be comfortable. But in other words, don't invade somebody's territory. Incidentally, in the hearing world, in this culture, there are differences around the world, but in the deaf world, deaf people stand farther away from each other to allow room for signing and reading each other when they are communicating. And, you know, mirroring, classic thing. If you see two people, I often see pictures in the newspaper of one subordinate mirroring the actions of another, whether it's holding their hands at their sides or crossing, whatever, it just shows a connection. So it's not one thing. It's a series of things.
Boy, I'll say, and you've covered a lot of them, and I want to go back to them, Gabriel. So much information there. It was so rich in content. I didn't want to stop you. You were on a roll. But I am going to hit the pause button right now. We're going to rewind back to something you said. And this is the one we all learned in grade school. It's the classic crossed arms. Mm-hmm. You know, you say, okay, you see somebody with their crossed arms, they're closed off, they're not receptive, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
Are we reading too much into it, though? I mean, are there times when crossed arms just mean crossed arms?
Well, as Freud said, sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. And that's true. I mean, the woman you're seeing, it's not a form of rejection. It's just that maybe she's chilly. It's cold in the room. And you just look at that one crossed arms. It shouldn't cut you off from understanding all the other pieces of the puzzle. And the reality is, too, that there is an understanding that we have of a one-liner that a man chases a woman until she catches him. Scientifically, this is absolutely true, because 90% of relationships are instigated by women, and often men just don't pick up the signals and the sign. They think they're being the big honcho guy who's starting something out, and some women are obviously extraordinarily good at it. It has nothing to do with her looks or character, that she just knows how to be female and how to attract men. And other women just simply don't get it. But for the most part, that statistic is true. 90% of relationships are begun by the woman.
All right. Now, that brings up an interesting point, Gabriel. Are there distinctly male or female gestures that you can define?
In terms of definition, there are male kinds of signs of testosterone poisoning, like cowboys in a showdown with each other. The way they will stand, and the classic Clint Eastwood glinting inscrutably, constantly at the other person. There is a toughness that he's mastered that character in, which is a very much a male sign. Curiously, in job situations, to show some vulnerability or weakness as a woman is a good thing. But for a man to show some sort of vulnerability or weakness gives a sense that, maybe I don't want to hire this guy. He's something of a wimp. So the same kind of actions by the other sex can be interpreted by, depending on who's sitting behind the desk doing the hiring, as a sign of strength in character or a sign of weakness.
Interesting. We're talking to Dr. Gabriel Grayson, everybody. He's written the book, How to Read a Person Like a Book, Observing Body Language to Know What People Are Thinking. Now, some other common characteristics. We had Carol Burnett on the show not too long ago.
Uh-huh.
Her trademark gesture at the end of the show is to tug on her ear.
Right.
Are there some historical backgrounds, not only just in her case, but historical backgrounds about certain gestures, tugging at your ear, covering your mouth, shaking hands? Is there significance in the history behind that?
Oh, sure, yeah. We talk about it, the original authors and myself, in the book. Some of the gestures ultimately enter sign language as part of a formal language. She created that as a personal connection, I believe, with her mother or aunt who raised her.
Grandmother.
And she, of course, is a master of nonverbal communication. If we remember the old Carol Burnett show, she just is absolutely extraordinary in the Charlie Chaplin league as a woman to convey thoughts and feelings by saying nothing with her face, hands, and body. I mean, she, I've always been enormously impressed by talent that just boils out of people, even though we're surrounded by often celebrities who you just wonder what it is that they are famous for. But but in fact, she's an excellent example of that. But for example, just taking your arms, folding them in front of you, and rocking as if you're holding a child is, in fact, in sign language, in various forms of sign language, the sign for baby, to hold and rock a baby, B-A-B-Y. And it's the natural sign that's used. And they're not the whole language is filled with, there are arbitrary signs that are are not pure visuals, but much of it has can be developed, and deaf people are very tuned into this. I mean, they're very much. I mean, they're essentially living in a world in which everybody is speaking a foreign language. They're moving their lips and saying something, but they're really not tuned into it. And in that sense, I think my special sensibilities come from that. Helen Keller once said if she had could have one of her senses back, it would be hearing much before sight. And when I say that in an opening lecture at the New School to the university classes, I can see kids looking at each other and say, this guy's crazy. You know, I mean, it's easy to just close your eyes and say, wow, you know, how could I exist like this in a world of darkness? But being deaf is far more than just not hearing. There's an isolation factor involved and a variety of other issues. And so hopefully at the end of the semester they have a greater awareness of this.
That's great. We're talking to Dr. Gabriel Grayson, everybody, author of the book, How to Read a Person Like a Book. And today's theme is books, so there could be, no more appropriate title. We've got to take a short break, Gabriel, but when we come back, I want to tease the audience. You mentioned in passing just a few minutes ago tips for projecting a more positive attitude at work or during a job interview. I want to come back and touch on that when we get back after this short break.
And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
You know, I think your brain produces a chemical that blocks out my voice.
What? Now here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Bill Frank. You're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're on every Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura County. Today's theme is books, how to create them, and how to read people like them. And my special guest in this half hour is Dr. Gabriel Grayson. He's written the book, How to Read a Person Like a Book. So very appropriate for our theme today. Gabriel, before we went to break, we were talking about things that you can do with your body language to project a more positive attitude or a more positive self-image at work or even on a job interview. Give us the secret sauce. What are some things that we can do to be more positive with our body language around the workplace?
Well, and I mentioned a number of ideas which gradually become can become incorporated into the way we act in the larger world and certainly at work. And it is often an extension of one's personality. There's a certain authenticity to it. I think some of it can begin with Benjamin Franklin's famous as-if principle, as if that you have a particular virtue, and over a period of time practicing that or trying to practice that, you find out that you do, not only being positive. Certainly, it's extremely difficult because we are confronted 24/7 with negativity and talking heads from all the medias that are pounding in on us. But to, in fact, realize, yes, you are an intelligent person, you are part of the world, you understand what's going on, but it is not something that is a damper on your spirits or positive nature. And part of the awareness of nonverbal communication is that you are, sometimes you meet people who are afraid to really do anything around you because it's like saying something to a psychiatrist. You're going to think, you know, you're goofy or crazy or whatever. No, there are just times you let your hair down, and it's not all analytical. But it, in fact, does heighten your discernment and sensibilities that something like this is not just pop psychology. I think there is a feeling that that this is created or obvious or whatever. But no, there are a whole bunch of studies on different aspects of body language and nonverbal communication, especially in the last 50 years. And some of the original studies showing that less than 10% of face-to-face contacts are what the words are. The rest is all nonverbal in terms of posture, et cetera, et cetera. This is a gigantic thought right up there with fire in the wheel. I mean, it influences everything. And while sometimes we see politicians who obviously have been coached in different ways, other times under stress we see them collapse, whether it's the famous presidential I did not have with that woman, where President Clinton was clearly lying, shaking his finger the opposite way and putting his two hands over his lips. They've done studies of this, and once you see it in action, you say, wow, you know, maybe I didn't catch it the first time around, but it's there. And it's fun. It's interesting. It is. The boulevardiers in Paris apparently go out every day and get a cup of coffee and sit on the Champs-Élysées and watch people walk by and try to figure out what occupation they have. It's sort of like a Sherlock Holmes.
And sort of like a whodunit.
And that's just fun. I mean, and certainly in a metropolis like New York City, you are constantly, as I was this morning on the subway, seeing all kinds of people dressed in different... Well, today, you know, it's mostly because of the 90-plus heat, extreme heat. It's mostly short-sleeve kind of things. But during temperate climates and weather, often you can get an idea of a person by his or her dress, their body movement, the expression on the face, all kinds of things like that. As a sidebar, it occurs to me there is a sociological theory that all the great art of the world has only been produced in the temperate zones, because if Shakespeare was in Antarctica, he would say, you know what, it's really too cold today to write. My hands are frozen. Or if Leonardo da Vinci lived on the equator, you know, the paint's running. I don't really feel like painting today. So we are influenced nonverbally, certainly here in New York. This has been, I think, the hottest summer, 90s plus every day, that I've experienced since living here in Manhattan the last 25 years. I see people clearly grumbling and unhappy and tired and all these things influenced by the weather. So that's part of the reading of a body language, that these are things that are external to us, but which in fact actually do influence us.
All right, we're talking to Dr. Gabriel Grayson, everybody, author of the book How to Read a Person Like a Book. And Gabriel, I'm going to put you on the spot here and ask you about a more recent event than, say, President Clinton, and that is the BP oil disaster that we've been experiencing in the Gulf of Mexico, mm-hmm. and BP's chairman, or then chairman, the erstwhile chairman, Tony Hayward. When he was making his speeches, were you watching that with a critical eye, looking
for
body language tips, and what did you learn from watching him speak?
Well, first of all, this is a man who has had a lifetime in the business, and who, in fact, even before he got his $18 million
golden parachute
fee, which is more money, let's face it, Billy, you and I have together. I mean, let's just look that.
Hey, speak for yourself, Gabriel.
And, that he was living in a an area of the high corporate world, and certainly an intelligent, educated, nice looking guy, well groomed, good suit, the whole thing. But I thought during the Senate subcommittee hearings concerning what did you know and when did you know it, this idea that he couldn't remember or wasn't in the meeting or whatever, obviously was a tap dance, and it was something that when you have a giant chunk of change, and it does change you, have a giant chunk of change in the bank, realizing that this is, you know, I'm not going to be shot, I'm not going to go to prison, and there are just certain areas that I may know about that I'm not going to talk about because of the implication of what I might say corporately involving other people to this terrible disaster, but also not being smart enough to keep these personal feelings to himself about getting his wonderful life back. This was a thoroughly ridiculed, and it should have been, but it shows a lack of awareness. I mean, many of these guys, I think, who are caught in the headlights of this kind, they don't really think that what they're doing is wrong. They just think, this is where I am, what I've been doing, this is how a culture of a particular business runs. And of course, we've seen widespread dishonesty. It's disheartening, actually, in every area, every institution of human life, from Wall Street to the Roman Catholic Church to education, et cetera, et cetera, and people who we thought were the best and the brightest. But again, when you have more power, it's easier to lie.
Well, absolute power corrupts absolutely. That's true. Absolutely. We're talking to Dr. Gabriel Grayson, everybody. But you bring up an interesting point here, Gabriel, and I want you to drill down on this for just a minute, please. And that is, how big a role does personality play in the way one presents oneself?
Well, I think the formations of these things are in childhood, and I'm a firm believer that, along with the studies, that in fact the kinds of stimulus and the kinds of role model that we have and choose and are around us in whatever our situation are powerful indicators of our growth mentally, physically, and spiritually. I've done some 3,000 cases in the criminal justice system now, and almost all these deaf guys are often in there for very serious stuff or repetitive stuff or have been arrested 25 times. They don't have a real sense of themselves, the future, the external world, and very little or no family ties, no clear role model. It sounds trite, but I think it's absolutely true, or someone who loved and cared about them and was struck by their uniqueness and encouraged that. And these things we deal with in later life, but it is it's an early beginning that I think you don't have to be a psychologist or a psychiatrist to make that concept, and then to be casual, not casual, but not so critical of those folks who have not had your advantages and blessings of personality or look or intelligence, that they are not, they're not working with the same kind of things or viewing the world the same way. But the that's why I think the kinds of things that children get exposed to by their parents, or they simply don't care, really are extraordinarily negative in so many different ways. And the child also is good at mothers are good at watching the nonverbal communication of children.
Right.
After a certain age, the child also gets tuned into their primary caregivers in a way that is positive or negative, and that begin to reflect what they see in other folks. I mean, there's nothing...
Gabriel, I'm sorry, I have to cut you off there. We're running out of time.
Okay.
If somebody wants to get your book, How to Read a Person Like a Book, where should they go?
Any Barnes & Noble or any other bookstore throughout the country. I was surprised to see that they put it in the section of self-growth, self-development, psychology.
And all right.
So that's the place to look for it, because it really is an expression of how to be more tuned in mentally, physically, and spiritually.
Thank you, Gabriel. Appreciate it, and we'll talk to you down the road. That brings us to the end of another show. You've been listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. Coming up next is Living Your Inspired Life with Susan Burrell. Join us tomorrow for another episode of Brainstorming with Billy the Brain.